Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
It's The Rundown with the biggest stories of the day from Jason and John on 92.9 FM ESPN. First story.
A little review from what we saw yesterday with a couple of Game 7s and then obviously over the weekend as well with Dallas advancing to the Western Conference Finals with a Game 6 victory. P.J. Washington there, the hero down the stretch, winning it at the free throw line. We'll get to that. Yesterday, Pacers handled the Knicks there in Game 7. We talked about it. Stephen A. was pumped up. Spike Lee had his best on. I mean, the energy at Madison Square Garden was through the roof. They were talking about traffic outside of MSG and how hard a ticket it was to get up in there. You had all the celebs. Knicks ready to advance that first Eastern Conference final in decades. And so it was all there for the taking. And there was Tyrese Halliburton. And I had been critical, and many had, of Tyrese Halliburton needing to have a big-time performance. It had two little, we call them little boy games, this series. He stepped up 26, but it was the entire team that we said, well, they can't keep shooting like this, and they did. Pacers set an NBA playoff record by shooting 67% from the field in that 130-109 win yesterday. It's like we said, it was just almost like watching a car break down with the Knicks these playoffs, just losing man after man. Josh Hart's going to try to battle through in the game. And again, you tell yourself, okay, he'll be fine. He's a soldier. He'll be all right. OG Anunoby has said, I'm going to play no matter. And so you're charged up, right? They're getting a couple more hands on deck, or at least one more hand on deck to go with a guy who says he's going to try to play through it. And Josh Hart, and you could tell when Anunoby was out there, hit his first couple shots, but he could not move defensively. And Pascal Siakam and those guys were attacking him. And in fact, again, that attack never stopped. Pacers made 29 of their 38 shots in the first half. A shooting percentage of 76.3% was the highest in the postseason since 1997. And so basically they got whatever they wanted. Led at 70-55 at one point, and then I guess where you thought maybe the Knicks could get back into it, but ended up pulling away. Talked about Siakam, Nembhard, both had 20. Aaron Nesmith goes 8-for-8 in a 19-point effort, and their role players in depth in a series where clearly the Knicks' depth had been left at nothing, essentially. The Knicks' role players, and you can talk about Burks, who did step up in that game. He kind of came out of nowhere in this series because they needed him to. He ended up with 26, Alec Burks did. They didn't have enough to go with him. Again, OG only playing 5 minutes after with the hamstring after initially saying, I'm going to play through that game. You saw Hartenstein bothered It looked like by injury, did not score, did have 8 rebounds, but he was not the factor that he had been earlier in that series, particularly on the offensive glass. And then Brunson literally breaks down even more in that game, fractures his hand late, and you just know that it's over for the Knicks at that point. He finished with 17 points, 9 assists. It was a heck of a series for Jalen Brunson, but in the end, again, when it's just the Villanova 3 trying to carry these guys and even the 3 are banged up, there was just nothing left for the Knicks. And so for Tibbs, I would still say good season. And what I would say is maybe you found a formula, you know, particularly with the addition of OG Anunoby this year, you found a formula that works. They were one of the top 3, top 5 defensive teams in the NBA once they added OG Anunoby. I would say go back with it. You know, get Hartenstein re-signed. Maybe they need to look at how, you know, at this point, and you imagine the series would have been different if Julius Randle is there, but how valuable, how necessary is Julius Randle to the whole outfit and organization? Right. You know, he's tying up a lot of that money. And again, if you just had, you know, a couple of more bodies, maybe even Bogdanovich, you're winning this series without Julius Randle. You're advancing to, you know, maybe even a finals without Julius Randle. So I'd ask you at this point, and again, I'm not telling you Julius Randle ain't a great player, but when have the Knicks advanced deep, you know, with him as the focal point? Did a pretty good job without him. I'd just say he'd be a guy I'd be asking right now, how necessary is he to this puzzle that we're trying to put together? Again, the additions of DiVincenzo, Hart, obviously Brunson, but all those paid off. It might be a deal where, you know, that team is now Brunson's. And Julius Randle's got to understand that. And maybe he already does through the regular season and everything else. But it's much like we said about Anthony Edwards. We said Minnesota is going to hit fast forward and be able to, when they figure out that that's his team as opposed to Karl Anthony Towns or anybody else's, get in line behind Anthony Edwards. Clearly, it's time to get him behind Jalen Brunson. And maybe you don't need Julius Randle in that line. And again, I don't know how, you know, how the rest of the league views Julius Randle, but I got to think, you know, if you did want to decide to move off of him, you'd have plenty of options in terms of what you can come back. Again, that's a side note. I think for the most part, the Knicks have it figured out. It was the right formula, just banged up. And defensively, again, a team that was so good defensively down the stretch with OG Anunoby could not be last night. What it led to was a historic shooting performance from the Pacers. Again, much of the talk, it feels like today, is centered on why the Knicks didn't make it. Is it Tibbs' fault? Boy, that thing was banged up. As opposed to giving credit where it's due to the Indiana Pacers, their role players really stepped up. Again, mentioned that Halliburton was good when he had to be in that game with 26 points, but they really showed off some depth that coming into this playoffs I didn't think would pay off in the way that it did. All that said, they have benefited quite a bit. The Pacers have, from injury situations, right, with the other team. That can always help you in terms of a push to a Western Conference final. That's the Grizzlies back in the day. Back to the point, Bucks were banged up. No Giannis, Dame from a lot of that series gone. Obviously, the Knicks were a banged-up car, too, in that series. But you've got to give them credit. I just don't think – I think at this point, you know, Boston – I'll tell you what the Indiana advancing does. Mm-hmm. Not that Boston would have had – you know, more of an excuse if it's the Knicks instead of the Pacers advancing. Because, again, I'd tell you, that's a banged-up Knicks team that would have played you in the final. But in terms of you better handle business against these Pacers, and I'll hold my hand up. I was critical of Boston even dropping 2 games, you know, in these playoffs so far to the Heat and to the Cavs. For the most part, they have taken care of business. There, you have no excuse. Frankly, it applies now over to the West, Brad, for the Boston Celtics, because there's no defending champ, there's no best player in the world anymore on that other side. And so the other part about what transpired over the weekend is I think it puts even more pressure on Boston. And I can hear my man Rob McCraw right now, one of our listeners, Boston fan. Oh, Jason, there you go with that narrative again. Tell me that this is not Boston's time. It has to be Boston's time based on, again, how many times Jalen Brown's been, 6 conference finals? Yeah. He's been to Tatum 5 of them. It's time to not just get to the finals. But now that it's Minnesota or Dallas, I don't think Boston's got any excuse whatsoever. But, again, hats off to the Pacers for advancing. They went on the road. Not easy to do, especially in Madison Square Garden. And real quick, Barrett, before we get over, we'll go real fast through these other games. Again, Timberwolves, Nuggets, Anthony Edwards, we had talked about it. Wasn't great offensively, 6 of 24, but did help the Wolves overcome what was a 20-point It's hard to even fathom as you say it. Second half deficit. This is against the reigning champs, a team that knows how to put teams, and particularly ones as inexperienced as Minnesota, although I guess you can debate their inexperience at this point, knows how to put those teams away. And looked like it was certainly on the way to that there early in the third quarter. And then what happens? They're shut down and outscored 28-14, held to 14 points in that third quarter, Denver was. And again, Minnesota did it with Anthony Edwards leading the way defensively, getting a bunch of steals, leading to fast break opportunities. All of a sudden, it started to feel like the energy in the building was shifting towards Minnesota, which again was weird to say because you were in a closeout game in Denver. And yet those fans, it sounded like a few hundred. At least that's what Chris Finch was saying after the game. They got loud, and I think it really added to Minnesota's confidence all of a sudden. Again, a team that's not supposed to be advancing gets 23 from Karl-Anthony Towns. You can't say enough about him in terms of late there. I was questioning. He's standing outside shooting threes rather than being in the fight, and at the end of the game, he's catching a huge, huge rebound off the rim and getting a putback dunk. Yeah. Him and Brad, the guy you brought up, Rudy Gobert, just absolutely fantastic for the Minnesota Timberwolves down the stretch of that game, helped offset what had been just a poor, we'll put it that way. Anthony Edwards had a 44-point game in the series. It helped offset a bad offensive night from Anthony Edwards. Our man Mike Conley, the conductor, just seemed to settle things down like he always does for them. Hit a couple of big threes and going 3 of 5 from the three-point line. Just made 3 shots, 3 of 10, but all of them were three-pointers. He finished plus 14, did his usual steadying 10 points, 8 assists, 0 turnovers for Mike Conley. So it all came together at the most improbable of times. Again, they're down by 20 early in that third, and then it was like a tidal wave. What Minnesota did defensively, and frankly, like we said there in the first hour, if I'm Denver, I'm looking around at all the other guys. You know, we had 2 guys in double figures last night, Jokic and Murray. You get 7 from Michael Porter Jr. in a 3 of 25. Looked real good against the Lakers.
Yep.
Was not the difference maker this series that he was last series. We said going in, that would be, this will be an X factor. Whether he can be as successful against a much better defensive team, he was not. He failed that test. Aaron Gordon, again, who for times at points in this series had carried the Denver Nuggets, just 4 points, and they get 5 points off their bench from Christian Brown. And so, again, a team that bet on young guys, I guess the one veteran off the bench, Reggie Jackson, was banged up down the stretch. He's giving you nothing. And so there was no one, when you looked around at all the other guys not named Murray and Jokic, who contributed in a significant way against a Minnesota team that made up its mind in that third quarter, we are winning this. They're not going to let 2 guys beat us. Denver made a bad decision in terms of what it bet on for depth this year.
I wanted to talk about the coaches that are involved with these games, because it seems like from the coaching of the year, the rankings from the end of the year and where that settled out wasn't exactly how it finished. Mark Daigneault was credited with all this development from Oklahoma City, and they kind of pissed out against the Mavericks. And actually, Jason Kidd figured out how to use Kyrie and did a great job with that. And then Chris Finch figured out a way against Denver. I thought those two coaches really should get some flowers, because I thought Minnesota has figured out in a year how to use the two big men and how to rotate them in.
They have.
Their inside-out game is awesome. And for them to close out that series on the road, I thought Minnesota and Chris Finch clearly separated themselves from the young teams. Obviously, the Grizzlies are banged up, but Minnesota's going to be the problem, it looks like.
I know I'm saying an obvious thing. No, I could not agree with what you said more, especially on Chris Finch, who was, by the way, you know, having to do it in a different way in terms of he's not the main voice they're hearing during the games because of the knee injury.
He's literally sitting down during the games.
You know, got to have surgery because of the injury you suffered during these playoffs. No, the adjustments they made. Yeah. The fact that at one point it looked like Jokic had figured out Minnesota, he's killing Rudy Gobert, and it doesn't. What are you going to do defensively?
Yeah.
If the 4-time defensive player of the year is getting cut up, what kind of adjustments can you make? He comes back, puts Karl-Anthony Towns on him, sends Gobert back to the roamer. They did that the final
figured
two games.
Out.
And listen, Jokic was going off yesterday.
Yep.
Don't get me wrong. And finally, I mean, at the end of that game, he's knocking down 3-pointers. I mean, 34 points, 19 rebounds, and 7 assists. Like, that's best player in the world type output.
Yep.
But they were making him work so hard for it. And more importantly, when it was time for Jokic to pass off, those other guys, they were closing out on the three-point shooters, on the role players, making it tough for them too. And so, you know, Jokic getting everything is fine if no one else is doing anything. And again, for the second half, Jamal Murray, for the most part, was held silent. Again, 11 of his 35 points came in the second half after a 24-point first half. So even on him, the job they did in tightening the screws was impressive. No doubt, Chris Finch, what he did defensively, you're right, because a lot of people thought from a general manager standpoint, you know, Conley was making a bad move with that Gobert trade. They took – Chris Finch believed in the roster, believed in that move clearly – made them the best defensive team in the league this year.
Yeah.
And it was defense that won them this series, particularly in those games that were in Denver, holding them to an average of 90 points in those three wins at Denver. I mean, no, how improbable was that? What, Denver lose 3-4 games during the regular season?
Yeah, and got beat by, 45 in that game six?
And absolutely clobbered them and took the mask off of them.
Killed them.
And so many people were using the excuse, well, it's just one game. I mean, Denver kind of let go of the rope. A champion can do that and bounce right back. Doesn't matter if you lose by one or by 45. No, clearly Minnesota had figured something out. Didn't look like they had it employed in the first half, but by the third quarter, they laid it back down. And again, if I'm in that Denver locker room, you got nobody to look at but yourself.
It's on you.
You got to go pat Jokic and Murray on. Murray was playing
those
hurt
two are okay
for most of the series. You got to go pat them on the back and say, guys, we didn't do anything.
We didn't do anything
for you in that game. And so there are your game seven recaps. And then real quick, the game from Saturday, Mavs close out in six. Edge, the OKC Thunder, who at one point I thought were about to force a game seven. They're late. It's P.J. Washington getting fouled by Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw him in his outfit coming in the game looking like R. Kelly on 12 play with the leather vest. Again, Shai, though,
ridiculous.
He was so good in this series.
Yeah.
So good.
He played well.
For the most part, had them in position. But in the end, it's him that fouls, inexcusable foul on P.J. Yeah. Washington there, sends him to the line for three free throws, makes two before an intentional miss. And it is the difference in a 117-116 win over the Thunder that puts the I think a lot of Grizzlies fans took great joy. And the fact that this OKC team that we
putting
feel like is biting off of us a little bit in terms of their swagger, the post-game interviews, some of the other stuff they've used, really looks like the Grizzlies from a couple of years ago. I took note on Twitter, on X, that there seemed to be a lot of glee taken by Grizzlies fans that the OKC was getting dispatched for some reason. And don't ask me what it is. But Kyrie Irving, you can't beat him in closeout games.
I mean, this dude played awesome.
He was 14. He's 14-0 now.
God.
In closeout games.
Doesn't miss in the fourth quarter.
He does not. And so when it's go time, Kyrie Irving steps up. Luka was
awesome.
Was the man. And then Derrick Jones, the guy you keep talking about from, you know, he had 22.
He played great in seven. In the seventh game, he was great.
He, for the most part in this series, man, he was pretty good for them. He and P.J. Washington, I thought, stepped up quite a bit. Dallas moving on.
Yeah.
And, it won't be the Denver Nuggets they're taking on. It'll be the Minnesota Timberwolves.
I guess six. Wasn't it?
What
that'd be game six. Yeah.
Yeah, that one was six. What a Western Conference finals it will be. And no one had this penciled in. I don't think to start Dallas and Minnesota. For Dallas, what is it? Second Western Conference finals in two and three years. So pretty impressive for Luka Doncic. Of course, this is a much different looking Dallas team now with Kyrie Irving. Stay tuned. We'll talk more about the upcoming conference final.
The addition on these finals games, so here's how it's going to lay out, because we're going to play all of these games are going to air on the station. They start out with the Eastern Conference tomorrow night at 7, and then Mavs on Wednesday, Pacers-Celtics again on Thursday. So it's alternating games every other day now, all the way through next Monday, which is, of course, Memorial Day. So there's going to be games every single night, and we'll have it here on 92.9.
Make sure you're locked in.
There you go.
Next story.
All right, so we saw what happened last week when the Memphis Tigers football team added a four-star who was the leading tackler from Tennessee in Elijah Herring. Following that up, over the weekend, we get a commitment, and this is all NIL-induced. They're adding a Germantown High School player who actually was at Purdue. He announced his commitment on Saturday, and his name is Allen. This is, let me go here. He's the former star from
D.J. Allen.
D.J. Allen, sixth defensive player to commit to Memphis since spring practice ended. Two linebackers, the defensive lineman and a defensive back, and now D.J. Allen in the transfer portal, joining Elijah Herring. Allen, ranked by 24/7, this is from the Daily Memphis, is a three-star prospect out of high school, committed to Purdue back at the end of December, and still has 4 years of eligibility entering the transfer portal. And now Ryan Silverfield is adding a defense to go with this offense, and it looks like it's all – here's what it looks like the prototype is. Players that have either – you know, you got a Tennessee player who's from Middle Tennessee. You get a guy who's from Germantown who is at Purdue. High-level, local roots kind of players from the state and from nearby that want to
to come home. And now you can say to these guys, like DJ Allen, like you pointed out, you can go, hey, would you like to come to Memphis and play in your home city? I mean, it's a great strategy.
It is. He's done it a little bit of every way. Because, again, a Chandler Martin, he gets out of the transfer portal last year from East Tennessee State. So not, you know, coming up, essentially, not coming down like you've talked about with Herring from Anderson from South Carolina, and he worked out and he's all AAC for you. Then you've seen, again, like the guys we talked about, Herring, Mario Anderson, have come down from SEC, and now you've got a guy who at one point was committed to UCF, flips to Purdue, spends spring practice with Purdue, and now you're getting him out of the transfer portal because, for a lot, like you said, there's more opportunity here now in Memphis. With the NIL situation, with what they've got in terms of the opportunity this year, it's more of a springboard than it's ever been. A chance not just for these players, but whether it's the coaches themselves, the AD himself, and they're still in that AD search, there's opportunity here in Memphis with everything they've got locked in from a resource standpoint, as good as it gets in the Group of Five. And so I think all of that is part, all that momentum is part of why you're seeing now these Memphis look at, you know, these players in the transfer portal look at Memphis. They had the other kid, I'm trying to think of a lineman that they got a couple of weeks ago that was at one point committed to Washington, but they flipped him. Again, how much of that is because of the now backing the resources?
Is Javon Dennis from Georgia State, maybe?
Elijah
Herring.
There was a kid, he's a lineman that at one point was committed to Washington. I can't remember his name. It was a couple of weeks ago, but they ended up getting him.
They've got 27 incoming transfers after 24 outgoing, so they've added three more coming in and 27 total.
So I'm saying crazy. Ryan's flipping guys. He's bringing in guys from the SEC. He's bringing guys up that that are paying off for Memphis, and so here in this case, DJ Allen looking like depth over the next few years for that defensive line. Like how much he'll contribute here immediately, I think that's up in the air. At one point, he was the number 9 player in the Commercial Appeal's 2023 Dandy Dozen in terms of their ranking of high school prospects. But what you love about him is you're going to have him for 4 years. And so it's sort of like we've said about Penny. You can't build these things completely on one-year transfer portals. I think it
Chris Adams out of Old Dominion, who is committed to Washington. He's a 6'6", 286-pound
offensive tackle. That's him from Old Dominion, coming from the same school that Blake Watson did, but at one point was committed to Washington. Thank you for finding that. Yep. And they flipped him because of now the opportunity here.
Yeah.
Again, you got to think that a lot of that is the $5 million. How much of it Memphis is getting, we don't know, but a majority of it sounds like that they're getting from FedEx now. And so more NIL, more increased opportunity, but also an opportunity to be on national television, maybe as the Group of Five representative in the college football playoff, coming off of a 10-win season for a team that's going to be picked to win the AAC this year by far. It might be a consensus. It might be all everybody.
Well, and now that FanDuel total is at 9.5 as I went to bet it over the weekend, Jason.
You noted that to me before we came on the show. We had said last week after Action Network headquarters, Brett McMurphy put out that Memphis's number was 8.5 on total wins. What did we say? We said that morning we think it should be 9.5.
Yep.
Well, apparently it is now.
9.5 is what I saw on FanDuel this weekend because I also wanted to parlay it. I couldn't parlay it, but I did bet it.
So that is among the most wins in the country. I think there was a couple of you at 10.5.
Yep.
But 9.5 would put you just in on that second tier in terms of a win-loss total for Memphis football. I thought that's where it should have been initially.
Yeah.
Was around 9.5. So anyway, good news for Memphis football that the guys
weekend,
keep coming
big
in
with DJ Allen.
And again, maybe this is a guy with DJ Allen that is contributing, hopefully, for years to come when it comes to your program, because that's how you get the continuity.
Next story.
All right, interesting story from Marvin Harrison Jr., who we know is headed to Arizona. It was a no-brainer for them to draft him. But he's had Fanatics now file a lawsuit against him.
I saw this story.
For breach of contract. I won't get much into the lawsuit or get into the weeds, but a breach of contract in 2023 against the rookie wide receiver. They said they had a deal with him. The sports apparel and collectibles company, that's Fanatics, that now does jersey sales and everything else, said they had a deal with him that basically did not fulfill his contractual obligations, and the receiver later said a deal with the company did not exist, though they said that it does, and requested a jury trial, Fanatics did, estimating potential damages in the millions of dollars. According to the complaint, Fanatics reached a multi-year agreement with Harrison in 2023 while he was still at Ohio State. Initially, Fanatics entered a limited promotion and license agreement with Harrison that was non-exclusive and set to end just before the NFL draft. So that makes sense. Had a deal with him while he was in college that was going to end right before the draft. We know he was going to go high. Ends up going number four to the Arizona Cardinals. Now, Harrison said a deal was never signed. That's his point on this, and that's why he is, when been asked to do things in terms of his obligations, said he never fulfilled them because he didn't have a deal. Fanatics said he was basically shopping around their deal for looking for better offers. They said that they asked him, well, show us the better offers. He never showed them anything. So it sounds like after signing, and a judge and jury, I suppose, will determine this, after signing a deal with him, he's trying to back out because he didn't think the money was high enough. He does not have an agent. His dad, Marvin Harrison Sr., the great Hall of Fame receiver, handles most of his business. But again, they've gotten real quiet when asked to bring in, okay, where are these other offers? Again, here's the other thing about him. He has not signed the standard NFL Players Association deal that would allow Fanatics to make his jersey. And so unlike Caleb Williams, unlike most of your favorite rookies on your team, who you could get a jersey for the moment they were drafted, you can still not get a Marvin Harrison Jr. jersey because he hasn't signed the NFL licensing agreement allowing them to use his name, image, and likeness, give it to Fanatics and everything else. And so it's not just this college deal that Fanatics is accusing him of trying to back out of. What's weird about Marvin Harrison Jr. is, again, he's not doing what most, including the number one pick in the draft, Caleb Williams, have done, and most do, which is sign this this agreement with the NFL and the Players Association to get your money for your jersey sales. He's continued to hold out. Now, he's not the first, and I didn't realize this, that apparently LeVar Arrington back in the day didn't do it either. Now, you're talking about if you're just a normal rookie who sells a decent amount of jerseys, your base royalties check is going to be $30,000, okay, according to a source, this is with The Athletic, within the NFLPA, familiar with the player earning figures. You got to figure, now for the top guys, like a Caleb Williams, like a Patrick Mahomes, you're going to get more because your jersey, and you figured, Brad, that Marvin Harrison Jr., as the four pick, was going to be pretty popular, and that he would get more than $30,000, but he has still, to this point, not signed the agreement. Again, he does not have an agent, and I would tell you, you don't have to have one. Lamar Jackson ended up getting his contract, but look at all the trouble he had to go through to do it. I'd say, I mean, that agent didn't get that percentage of it that he would have gotten, so you can say Lamar Jackson won, but ultimately it is not smart business to move in the NFL when you were at the level that Lamar is. Again, I tell you, he could have gotten that contract a lot earlier, and that you figure Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be. LeVar Arrington back in was the number two pick in the 2000 draft, didn't sign his licensing agreement until several seasons into his career, which lasted through 06. And so I guess for a long time there, you could not get a LeVar Arrington jersey. So while these, you know, these guys that do not sign choose not to sign, it's not unprecedented. It is rare.
What's the
that
reasoning?
You've got to go back
if
that
that's
far.
The PA agreement,
he wants to control
deal.
His whole name, image, and likeness. He wants to make all the money off of what he gets, and for some reason, he thinks he should have a separate, completely separate deal than what the NFLPA has worked out with, you know, Fanatics, with the people that do the jersey sales right now. So I don't.
And that's strange.
Remember, and I have less of a problem with it as I do with how he's conducting his business, but he didn't do anything at the combine. You know, he stayed out of everything, basically. I want to say he ducked a few interviews or whatever, or a couple times that he was supposed to show, said he would show, didn't show, on the advice that, listen, whether you do interviews or combine work, it's not going to affect your draft status at all.
Right.
It was cemented at Ohio State. You're going to go at least top five. And so a part of me can understand, you know what, forget it. Because I could say something in the interview, some team might hold against me, whatever. If I work out, I could pull a hamstring or I put in a time. More importantly, it might drop me. So I kind of understand that.
Yeah.
But taking that now to this level of I'm going to be different than everyone, sort of like we were saying about Caleb Williams and how his dad initially was, hey, we want ownership of the Chicago Bears as a stake in owner. Not understanding that that's against the rules, but kind of looking at it as we're different. Right, our business is going to be conducted differently. Yeah. I think his dad's got his head a little big here in terms of the way you conduct business. I'm not telling you that Marvin Harrison's not going to get paid down the line or benefit here from holding out with Fanatics at some point and get a better deal because of it, but I'm just how much better is what I'm asking. Is it worth it? You're holding up what should be jersey sales that go way past the $30,000 you would get. You're holding that up. Why? I mean, at some point, bro, you're going to have to get out on the field.
Yes.
But he's treating this thing as if, you know, best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, man. I don't understand the way you're conducting business. Even the Caleb Williams of the world have signed this, yeah, this deal with the NFLPA. It's a deal they worked out. Why you think you should be separate and get something different is a little bit strange to me. But, yeah, right now you cannot get a you can still cannot, until he signs that agreement, you can still not get a jersey when it comes to Marvin Harrison Jr., an Arizona jersey.
So,
and he's being sued by Fanatics for allegedly backing out of his college deal.
So my guess on this is, okay,
it's bad business.
If it's $30,000 you're going to get, they all get the check.
That's
$30,000,
the standard,
right?
Though. That's the standard. That's a base royalties check.
So you get that check, and then there's got to be on a per basis of jersey sales. So let's say you sold 10,000 jerseys, you might get a dollar from those too, I would assume, or a certain percentage.
Right. And
on top
again,
of it,
this is the NFLPA deal that they've got with Fanatics.
This deal.
That is part of what rookies getting
paid.
This
is interesting.
Why you think you should be outside of the deal that the player signed is ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
And maybe, again, it's bad advice on the part of his father, who appears to be handling most of his business interests and everything else. Just tell you, bro, get you an agent. It's not, I mean, it's probably worth it for what you're missing out on right now, and would certainly keep you from being sued by Fanatics. They say they've lost millions because of you. You may end up paying out of your pocket, you know, for this. So I don't get it. And I hope it's certainly not a sign of how Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to conduct himself when it comes to being a football player. Because at some point, you know, you have to show that locker room you're part of the team.
Yeah.
That you're not walking on clouds and thinking, because in the end, you need that quarterback to get you the ball.
Right.
You're not the star. You're not the face. That's going to be Kyler Murray, right? If it does end up, that's going to be your quarterback. Bro, it's time to come to the NFL and produce. You're not walking on air here.
Yep.
Next story.
All right, so we'll talk about Scottie Scheffler in a moment here, but let's start off on the PGA Championship event. This is in Louisville at Valhalla Golf Club. This is where the Scottie Scheffler thing started on Friday. Xander Schauffele is now the best golfer in the world without a major championship, no longer, because he won it. He's 30 years old. He's from San Diego, and he outlasted Bryson DeChambeau and Victor Hovland, I don't know if you saw it there on the back nine, just fell apart, it felt like, and really had this thing in hand.
Yep.
DeChambeau, on the other hand, kind of came out of nowhere. He ties it up on the final. He holes it at the end on 18, and then Schauffele kind of made it happen, though. So Schauffele is your champion. DeChambeau, he defeated him by one. He beat Hovland by three. But the interesting thing is this story from Friday. Scottie Scheffler put himself in the top contention here towards the end. The problem was he didn't have his caddy on Saturday and Sunday because his caddy was having a graduation from high school from one of his kids. So Scottie Scheffler has to go out, get arrested, get out of prison, play the second round on Friday, puts himself in contention, and then he's playing without his caddy on Saturday and Sunday. Now, a couple of things happened with the Scottie Scheffler thing that I wanted to talk about, Jason.
Yep.
First of all, they didn't have
crazy
body
story.
Camera. Suddenly,
I
they
saw.
Couldn't have body camera footage.
They didn't have it turned on or something, the cop.
It was not on. And so Scottie gets
doesn't
out.
Surprise me.
Yeah, and so now Louisville kind of has, it looks like they're going to let this whole thing go. It
which,
looks like
which
it's going to get out of this.
Which we said would happen from the get-go.
Yeah, so that is sort of where it's at. Scottie Scheffler doesn't win it. Xander Schauffele does win it. Bryson DeChambeau puts himself in contention on the last hole, but ends up losing out to Xander. Victor Hovland loses on the final round. Did you watch any of the golf tournament?
A little bit down the stretch, and then I quickly turned it off. once I saw that that it looked like our number one Scheffler wouldn't be in contention down the stretch.
Yes.
I did see highlights of DeChambeau making his charge, and then again something that we'll probably talk about that he did. We'll probably talk about it in respect.
Yeah,
saw a little bit of that, but all credit, you know, I tip my cap to Xander Schauffele. He was good when he had to be. He's good from the beginning, but then when he needed that birdie there at the end, he was able to pull that out of the hat for that major. You get the monkey off your back.
Yeah,
you know, you got to feel good for him. That's my golf take.
I was surprised at how Scottie Scheffler played this weekend.
He held it together that first day pretty good, and then it, you know, you're losing. You don't have your caddy.
Yeah.
You can understand losing focus.
He said he was proud of his finish. He shot a 65, and actually closed pretty well there. But I was surprised at the whole Louisville Police Department thing because I It looked different on Friday. I didn't think it would go the way it went. I thought they would maybe dig in a little more. I thought we'd see some body camera footage. And it sort of just went away.
They don't have a leg to stand on. It's ridiculous. Again, they had let other golfers through.
Yep.
I realized that, you know, you're trying to trump up. You jumped on his car. You said he drove you 10, 15 yards, whatever it was. But this was always going to be a bad look for Louisville police. We said yep. that last week. So in the end, they really don't have a leg to stand on.
Xander Schauffele is your champion for 2024.
Congrats to him.
At Valhalla. Yep.
Next story.
All right, I don't know if you saw this, Brad, but a story up over the commercial appeal I thought was interesting. A list ranking the top 50 metropolitan areas in the United States placed Memphis, as the CA article puts it, above some cities you might not expect. Now, this study was done by Brand Finance. You know, we get a lot of bad headlines when it comes to Memphis right now. I thought I'd maybe bring you some of this good news. Brand Finance, marketing consultant in London, 10,000 individuals were surveyed across the country. Survey participants were asked to express their opinions on the overall reputation of each city. There were two main categories that people were asked to reflect on: the seven dimensions of brand activity and the seven attributes of city brand perception. Now, that's a lot there, but some of those dimensions are retire, visit, invest, work locally, work remotely, live, and then the seven attributes of brand perception: business and investment, livability, culture and heritage, people and values, sustainability. Where does Memphis rank on this list? Right in the middle at 26. Not as bad as you might think.
That's pretty good.
And again, ahead of such places as Washington, D.C., who they had at 28, Sacramento, who they had at 29, Philly, 30, Chicago, 32, St. Louis, 42, Detroit, who Jeff says is their downtown's undergoing a renaissance, and people are coming back, they're at 50 with a score of 50.4. So to be at 26 and ahead of those, ahead of those places, mm-hmm. I feel pretty good about. Take a guess on number one.
Is it Nashville?
They are number three.
Oh.
So, yeah, that was the other part of this story. And, again, it's over at commercialappeal.com, this study that was done. It's the other part of this story that you feel good of who you're ahead of.
Yeah.
But then when you look ahead of you in line and you see Nashville all the way up at number three, behind only Honolulu, Hawaii, their score was 82.9.
That one doesn't kind of count because it's not part of the continental, you know what I mean?
Orlando, Florida.
Okay. Now,
they were 82.6, and coming just behind them was Nashville at 82.5. They basically got it as the third best place to live.
And that's taken in totality all those things.
I mean, everything, culture and value. Yeah. Now, I would tell you that Nashville doesn't have a culture.
Okay? No.
That's one of the things that they should have been.
Strip malls.
One of the things that they should have been dinked on. But what are we talking about? I mean, in terms of moving forward as a city, you don't see any old buildings that aren't being utilized and turned into something new.
Yeah.
I mean, Nashville, all you see is cranes there because they're a city on the move.
Yeah.
My gosh, at some point here in the very near future, Brad, they're going to have a Super Bowl because of that new stadium, that the Titans are going to have. Yeah. They've already had the NFL draft. And so while I can't lie that they should be ahead of Memphis, I do. I mean, the fact that they're third on this list makes me a little sick to my stomach. Again, Memphis is ahead of some pretty nice places to live, though.
You would
typically think. I mean, I would consider Sacramento a nice place to live. No, as compared to Memphis,
I think it's okay.
And yet Memphis 26 on this list, Sacramento 29, Philly, Chicago, St. Louis, Detroit, all behind Memphis. I think being mid on this list,
decent
is actually a compliment to the city.
Yeah, there is
cost of living obviously factors in.
There's another thing from the Sunday Times. It's a UK outlet, and they have a reporter who has been coming through the U.S. And you see these from time to time. People who they look at our city better than we look at it. But this is a 48 hours in Memphis, and this guy went to the Peabody. He did the arcade. He did the downtown stuff, and then he did Crosstown. He did Graceland. He did it's a tourist view of it in 2 days, including seeing the Reverend Al Green on the second day of his trip. And he said, and again, this is one of those things that's floating around social media. I posted it on my Facebook account, and he calls this America's most fun city right now. And he lays out his 2 days that he spent in Memphis. I say that to say, I think sometimes we
get a bad rap.
We don't look at the positives we have, and it's really easy not to when you have crime problems. But I will say this, as somebody who's come from St. Louis area, St. Louis is really going through it right now. That's why we're probably higher than St. Louis. Their downtown, Like a lot of people.
St. Louis 42 on the list with a score of 60.
They've got an abandoned football stadium downtown that they're using for their XFL or for their UFL team, which is doing okay. But then people aren't going to the Cardinals games. Ballpark Village hasn't been attended and used as much as the ownership would like. Their downtown's having some problems. They also have a crime problem issue. St. Louis, I would argue, is really it should be behind Memphis. I think Memphis is ahead of St. Louis now. I don't know. Nashville, I think Nashville, Austin, and Charlotte, for whatever reason, they seem to be the darling of these polls all the time. Those three cities, Charlotte in the South at least, Austin too.
Austin too. You mentioned Austin. I don't know if you've got the list.
I don't have it in front of me. Where are they at?
Was a good call. They're ninth on the top 10.
Is Charlotte in the top 10? Let me pull it up here.
No, you don't need to pull it. I'm looking at the top 10. Honolulu, Orlando, Nashville, San Diego, Miami, Las Vegas, Tampa, Denver, Austin, San Antonio.
People like Vegas.
That's the top 10.
People like Charlotte. Those are cities. I would, you know, if we can get this crime thing licked and some of the local stuff, that would seem to help a lot, right? You're going to be redoing your basketball stadium pretty soon. You're going to have a brand new football stadium in your city. Like, I would think.
Sounds like a whole new face of FedEx format. Out there as it's connected to Beal and everything else, like a whole new up.
Like it kind of weaves into, it's supposed to weave into the Beal Street thing. Right?
All of it needs to be updated down there.
I mean, that'll take us a long way up this poll, I would think, from the 20s.
I would agree. Lowering crime will help you with that as well, because you got to figure, I mean, if you're in the middle of the list with the crime problem that you have, you can certainly move up if you could lower the issue, because it is such a big issue in Memphis. But yeah, I mean, dude, still in terms of cost of living and stuff, Memphis, great.
The cost of living
compared to some of these other cities on the list. I mean, you're getting a bonus for that.
Well, and like if you compare it to Dallas, like Chris was just in Dallas for that country music seminar thing, and he said the problem with it is you can't get anywhere below an hour. You can get anywhere in Memphis in 15 minutes.
That's another thing that we don't get dinked. Traffic in Memphis, for the
it's
most
nothing.
Part, you can get there.
You can get there easy.
Traffic is worse in Murfreesboro. I was telling you about that last week than it is in Memphis.
Spring Fling thing,
yeah. Yeah, freaking Murfreesboro and everything.
South of Nashville's a disaster.
Even when Spring Fling's not in, just with MTSU, how tightly congested that town is built.
Yeah.
But then all the traffic that's in it, it will literally take you, you have to like plan 30 minutes ahead of time, leave 30 minutes ahead of time. And that's like on a normal day in Murfreesboro, you're saying this should not be like
this. It's
crazy. And like you said, a lot of it coming down from Nashville and everything else. But with Memphis, you're right. For the most part, I guess I probably complain too much sometimes when 240 gets back.
Right.
For the most part, our circle moves.
It moves.
You know, we're not caught up all day out there.
Yes.
So we probably do pretty. Now, traffic fatalities, we're high in though, Brad. And that's something that CJ
Davis
talked about.
Like maniacs.
We're high on the list of national leaders in traffic fatalities. Hell, we got more than some of the big cities. So we've got
to
get
connected
that,
to crime a little
we
bit.
We
got to
get that number. There ain't no question that some of that is connected to crime. So we've got to get that down. But I thought this
it's
is some
nice
good
list.
News for Memphis here on a list where you're again ahead of some big boy cities like Chicago, Philadelphia,
ahead of Portland. Generally, people tend to lift Portland ahead of Memphis.
You saw that.
That's nice.
Yeah,
I got it pulled up here.
Do you believe it though? Is Memphis a better place to live than Portland?
You know, I've been to San Francisco, but I haven't been to Portland.
Okay,
but people tend to look at Portland. The one thing you hear from Portland folks is they say that the homeless problem in Portland, I guess, is they have a lot of
the whole West Coast.
Yeah,
whole West Coast.
And we have our own little bit of that too. But crime seems to be ahead of homelessness here.
Yeah. As Brad said, Portland was right behind Memphis, was in front of Portland, and then just in front of Memphis was Virginia Beach, Virginia. But, yeah, you're ahead of Washington, D.C., Sacramento, Philly, Chicago, St. Louis, Detroit.
That's nice.
Wrap your arms around yourself. Wrap your arms around Memphis. We're doing pretty good in some areas. We are going to take a break real fast, come right back. We're going to sort of recap what happened with Fabe Brad over the weekend. Get you set for the week. No games today, but we're going to talk about where that record is, why we are loving this segment so much. Then we'll get you to third hour, 125. We'll have the great Jason Fitz on. We'll dive back into the NBA playoffs with him. Got a lot of parity going on in the NBA right now. Is a good thing, bad thing for the league? We will discuss with Jason Fitz, third hour. You're listening to Jason and John, 92.9 FM, ESPN. A little saddened today that we don't have an NBA game on tap. So that we could get Brad on the picks tonight. But happy that we will have one a day going forward.
You mean to pick a ball game? On just random baseball game or something?
I don't know. I don't know.
We don't want to hex it. I don't scratch that. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Exactly. Don't mess up the mojo.
Don't do that.
Yeah. We're not. Stay with what's working.
And
Yeah.
I have a fear we don't want to preview too much.
Got to be careful.
These conference finals, right? Because we don't want to sway.
You can talk about it. I will try to just kind of glance at it.
We don't want to influence you.
Yeah, I get it.
In your process. Because typically that is held to game days.
Yes.
And so.
Lines and stuff.
While we won't have a pick tonight, they'll pick up starting tomorrow. And, oh, by the way, as Brad announced, you can hear every single
they're all here.
Conference final game.
Every one of them.
On 92.9 FM ESPN.
And the finals, too.
While you're fading Brad. And, oh, when it comes to fading Brad, what a weekend it was. A little review. Brad, over the weekend, had game six. That was Friday. Had Knicks plus 5.5. Well, the Knicks lost 116-103. So we were 0-1. And remember, remember, we needed Brad to really turn off the lights because he had been hot.
Time to close.
He'd won 7 of 10.
Yeah.
And that's not the way this segment works with him picking real winners. He had gotten hot. He had gotten on a heater. That, oh, by the way, our man John Martin was even impressed by. I ran it by him through text. He said, it's a nice little run Brad's on. I said, it's killing the segment.
Well, that really makes me feel good.
It's killing the segment. But even a true sharp, as John, I think, would appreciate me calling him, appreciated how hot you were.
It's the long game, though.
What I told him was it's killing the segment. Yeah. Brad's got to get it turned around, start picking losers.
And but see, I wasn't going to lie about who I felt. No, you know, these are integrity picks.
What we asked you to do was very tough. Is still pick with integrity, not change your approach just because we were feeling the heat.
Yeah, like don't start going, oh, you know, I'm going with Denver because I think they suck.
And feeling the heat of wanting to deliver losses to our listeners so they could fade you, we did not want you to change your approach.
It's investment.
You did not. And over the last four picks, ladies and gentlemen, Brad's gone 0-4. Again, after going 7-3. Right in the nick of time, we mentioned had Knicks plus 5.5 on Friday. That was a loser. On Saturday, had Dallas minus 4. Dallas did win that game, but they only won by 1 on those P.J. Washington
didn't cover
free throws. That's right, 117-116 did not cover. So we were 0-2 going into yesterday's Game 7. Now, we didn't do that Game 7 of Knicks Pacers because at the time didn't know there would be one. On Game 7 of...
However, if I would have picked it, I would have picked New York, as I pointed out on social media.
There you go.
Yeah, but you can't count that, though.
Obviously, yesterday you were on Denver minus 4.5. Nuggets get beat by 8. And at one point, you're feeling like Brad's going to go 1-2 here because Denver was up 20.
Yep.
Was in complete control of that game early in the third quarter. And they somehow let it go. Again, a lot of that credit goes to Minnesota. As for the season record.
Oh, boy.
Again, we cannot wait for these conference finals to start tomorrow night. Brad, now 25-38. If you flip that, 13 games under 500. Brad, those fading Brad are 38-25, obviously.
What's the percentage?
Brad, drum roll, please. Mm. That's going to put you at 60.3%.
We've got it back over Brad.
I saw on Facebook that folks were saying just fade Brad to prosperity and riches. I mean, if we're hitting on 60%, and this is a fantastic sample size now versus the spread for Brad, because you're talking about 63 picks.
Yeah.
And for 38 of those 63, well over half.
Yeah.
In fact, at 60, you have found the loser.
I got a loss.
Again, so if you are fading, as we have said from the get-go, you are 13 games over 500 through these playoffs. Show me your chart that is picking them better or at a higher rate through these playoffs. I'm sure they're out there, but they have to be few and far between. Brad Carson has found something here. We have found something in him. It is a consistency in betting, and in this case, a consistency at finding losers that we have now flipped into one of the best betting edges going.
So when it's Michael Porter Jr.
Speech.
Michael Porter Jr., as he was losing for the Denver Nuggets yesterday, I thought of his brother.
Jonte.
His brother Jonte, who brought us all this gift that is this segment.
He should be fading you.
So Michael, of course, he's not the gambler. Jonte is the gambler. This segment started when you so wisely pointed out that Jonte was going to be bounced out of the league. And it was probably a bad gambler as well, it appears. But we looked at my FanDuel limits. John, pretty good gambler. He claims to be somewhat of a professional in this.
As evidenced by his low limits.
Low
at
limits.
These sports books.
You? An average limit, but still
square.
A little
close. I think
square.
I was in the 20,000s.
But no one could have thought that the $40,000 limiter, it was much higher than yours, would have led to something like this where we just pick losers and we pick them consistently.
It's freaking genius.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, again, and it has given us one of the best. Again, I challenge you to bring me your sharp. Is it Adam Chernoff? No, he does NFL. That's who John uses.
Yeah.
Bring me your NBA sharp that is consistently coming in above 60%. We're at 60.3. I want to underline something about this exercise and about this segment. It is proof of something that Brad and I believe and John does not. Brad and I believe that there are no true edges in betting.
We disagree on
this.
That
is really the point of this segment, is to show you that we're fading a guy who picks losers. And look, oh, by the way, it's winning. How silly is that?
It's ridiculous.
And I realize a sharp, and again, I am not disrespecting the work that goes into being a sharp that's got a 58 or 59 or even 60 or above win percentage. That's a lot of work. I imagine it's a lot of stress, too.
Oh,
just to try to get to that 60, because, again, if your sharp's claiming he's hitting at 70, 75, he's not doing that over any significant amount of time here. But back to my point, I'm not disrespecting the work that they put in. But what I am telling you is that with all that work they're putting in, if I can get the same clip by fading a guy who's putting in no work, then show me the real edge.
So
that is the point.
And when you think about this week,
just underlines why you got to be responsible, because this stuff is wacky.
This weekend in particular outlined it and put a highlight on it. Think about this
for a second.
Yes, this weekend. Think about the games for a second. And just take them individually for a second. The Knicks are on their home floor, okay?
Yes.
And they get bounced decidedly in Game 7. It wasn't close.
Wasn't even a game.
Was not close, okay? And then you might go, oh, the Mavericks, they can win Game 6. They can beat Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City's like the Grizzlies. They're a young team. You know, they've got Kyrie over there.
Mavs could have lost that game.
They could have, but it was a good game, and it was Game 6.
They do come back and win.
But the third one, this is the carrot on the top of the losing. When you see Denver in Game 6 beat the hell out of the Timberwolves by 45 points, most people are going, okay, it's a 4.5-point spread. Denver going to win at home. This is why Mike Malone was so pissed off, because he was just as sad as all the people who bet on the Denver Nuggets, because there's no reason most people would have thought, and yet here we are, Denver Nuggets, they lose by what, 6, 8? They lose in Game 7.
Eight.
At altitude.
Held to 90 points at home.
At altitude. And they hold the rest of the team, you know, now the two main stars for the Nuggets performed, but the rest of the team looked like they didn't even show up. So to me, that third game, that Nuggets game, is where you go, there are no true edges, man. What are we talking about?
That's the point here.
Yeah, so I think we're on to something.
We found genius in it.
And I'm okay to be wrong about this. Like, if it's a benefit to our listeners, I'm going to still pick with integrity.
Dude, people that are fading you are doing great.
Here's what I'll say.
At 60.3%. Again, you are not going to. This is through 63 postseason
games
versus the spread.
It's a large sample now.
That's a big sample size.
Big sample.
Again, the longer you stay above 60, the louder we can get bragging about this.
The
fact that you've stayed this high, this consistent, is amazing.
I don't want to overtalk the games that are coming up in the conference finals, but I will just give a tease.
Don't look at the injury reports.
I'm not looking at any injury reports. I'm not going to look at any websites.
Don't change your approach.
I just want to say one outlining thing, because this is not. I think this is within bounds of the bit. I do sort of lean towards Mavericks and Boston as we head into tomorrow. That's all I'll say.
I think that's clean, right? I completely understand. You're fine to say that.
I think that's where I'm at.
I think I'm leaning that way as well.
Yes. Veteran teams.
Although I maybe by the time we tip off the Western Conference finals,
I may be leaning.
I could see myself going back and forth between them and Minnesota, just because of the way Minnesota defends.